M36. Number 2A.
So, for an hour or so, I would like to speak about healing on the level of absolute Christian Science. We have seen when we were investigating the question of evil, and therefore duality, that Mrs. Eddy makes that statement that matter and mind are not two. In other words, she indicates that if we see the proposition of evil right, we see it as evil. We see it as good, and no more as evil. Because if there are not two, then there is just one, and that is good. Therefore, any problem which confronts us, any severe problem that confronts us and approaches us in the name of evil, we should see that it is a problem of good and not of evil. Now, absolute Christian Science is that level of thought where we lift the belief in evil out of itself and see that there is no such a thing as a belief in evil, but just one thing, the idea of good. So, if we see that, then we can see that what seems to be a problem is actually nothing else but the blessing that approaches us, and that we accept it as a blessing and not as a problem. On the level of Christian Science, we analyze the problem and analyze the problem as a problem and what it is and what it suggests to be. But on the level of absolute Christian Science, we take what is called a problem and see it as a blessing, and only as a blessing. So, Christian Science, the level of Christian Science, translates matter back into mind. When it's translated back into mind, then absolute Christian Science sees the problem just as pure idea. So, let's think a little bit about this method of healing on that theory, so to say, of absolute Christian Science. And perhaps if you like to see a bit what that is in other terms, perhaps you know Peggy Brooks' article on scientific healing today, which appeared in Ideas of Today, and which he also has published in a reprint in a little booklet. I think Ralph has it here for sale. It is that little pamphlet where in the second part of that pamphlet, Peggy shows the problematics of dealing with a problem in absolute Christian Science as idea. I just want to recapitulate in my own language and term what she has presented there and show that she is speaking there in the second part of the article, really, on the level of absolute Christian Science, as you have it in the chart, and where you have in absolute Christian Science the synonymous term life, truth, and love, and therefore we can consider what is called a problem from this level. So first, I tackle life, truth, and love in the Word. The Word, as you know, is always the presentation. Here it would be the presentation of the problem, now looked at from the standpoint of idea. When Peggy calls her article Christian Healing, now Scientific Healing Today, then she means that she wants to compare it with healing yesterday. In other words, she compares the old paradigm with the new paradigm of healing. And so I want to stress the old paradigm and then compare it with the new paradigm. Now, what is the old paradigm when a problem arises I think it is that our attitude and the proposition from where we go out is that we attempt to change the phenomena, that we try to change the phenomena of disease or of lack or frustration or whatever is under consideration. So we go out, so to say, from a problem and try to change the appearance of it. We try in this way to meet a human need. To meet a human need. That's the old paradigm. And we are going to define what that human need is. You see, this is the old paradigm. We say what the problem is, we name it, we consider it as a problem and that it should be met, so as the human need is met, and we try to do that by changing the phenomena. Now, what is the new paradigm when we go out from absolute Christian science? An absolute Christian science only knows ideas and nothing else but ideas. Therefore, what is that which humanly is being called a problem? Well, instead of now in the new paradigm, instead of now changing the phenomena, what do? We change also something, but not the phenomena. We change the standpoint. So instead of starting out changing the phenomena, we change the standpoint to the standpoint of principle with its perfection, and that principle can only meet really a spiritual need and not a human need. So in absolute Christian science we can see that the divine principle is meeting a spiritual need. That principle that is aware of itself does not know a past, nor a present, nor a future, therefore does not know anything that this problem did arise in the past and how it is now, and how it should be changed in the future. It has no such a sense of past, present, and future. It's always at the point of life. Life lives itself. See, we are at life, truth, and love. Life lives itself always as idea. Therefore, life living itself as idea is always the law of spontaneity, meaning that life brings forth constantly the new idea, whereas in the old paradigm we try to reason according to the law of cause and effect. In the old paradigm we try to see what is the evil cause, what caused the disease to come into existence, and then to try to rectify that law of cause and effect in the erroneous field with a law of cause and effect in the divine field. But here, in absolute Christian science, we have not the law of cause and effect. We always have the law of isness, of spontaneity, where everything is every second new. So something that has its cause in the past is corrected by seeing it has no cause in the past. Every split second, life is anew and brings forth, through the law of spontaneity, always a new idea. So we can see what this new idea is when we see it, that it is life that urges and impels every moment the right idea to come into being. Therefore we lose a sense of a past, we lose a sense that something in the past went wrong. We are not even correcting that, we are correcting something which is much deeper than where evil came from. We are correcting that and saying, evil never had a cause, therefore never had an effect. Therefore, we see the fact about it. The fact about it is that the only cause is in the spontaneity of life, and life only brings forth its idea. It lifts us. It lifts us how? As truth, as the facts of truth, and therefore never as disease. It lifts the facts of truth and as love. These facts of truth are always at the point of fulfillment, of perfection. So we can see the cause, life, is true and is a perfect cause. A cause that is right from the beginning, perfect, and therefore can only bring forth the ideas of good. So, what then is the problem that seems to bother us? Well, these problems are not what they seem to be. They only draw our attention, actually, to a new birth. All they can do now is to show that life urges upon us a new idea, that life wants us to accept a new birth. So that behind that, what is called a problem and which is considered negative, there is actually a positive problem behind it, namely life urging a new fact, its true facts and its fulfilled facts on us and asking us to accept it. So, again, we can put it in another way and say, all right, here comes a problem. We can only be aware of it humanly. On the material plane of thinking, we can be aware of a negative problem. Spiritually, we cannot be aware of such a problem. Spiritually, it is that life, truth, and love enforce on us the problem. Life, truth, and love enforce the problem on us. Why? Because a new idea is waiting there and wants to be manifested in us and as us, wants to live us. A new idea of life, truth, and love wants to live us, and therefore, if we don't accept it willingly and consciously, it brings about what is called on the human level a problem. So, these problems are actually nothing else but the human sign that make us aware that something in our attitude is missing, asking us to fill in what is missing, therefore to go out from the fullness of life and see that the fullness of life is urging its claim on us, asking us to accept much more than what we have accepted before. Now, this is a positive problem. If life is asking us to accept much more than before, does not want to leave us in barrenness of spiritual thinking, but really is an urge to rise higher. So these problems actually are therefore angels entertained unawares. They are not little devils that creep up. They are angels that come and say, I don't want you to leave you there where you are. I want you to exalt you, to draw you higher and higher. And you can see what the difference in attitude that is if we have a problem and call it a bad problem, a very difficult problem, a very severe problem, or if we call it just the other way around and say, this is not a severe problem, this is a wonderful opportunity for unfoldment. The time is ripe for something new to fill my consciousness, to come in and throw me or lift me higher and higher. So the problem really is no more a problem, but it is, so to say, a spiritual gift, a spiritual bestowal. So can you see again, it's only a matter of how we look at it. By itself, nothing is really good or bad. It is again our standpoint, our attitude to that situation that makes it either good or bad. So we have the choice. It's up to us if we want to let ourselves be dragged down by calling a new birth a problem or by calling a new birth a blessing from above. This is our choice. It's so to say in the palm of our hand, really, to make out of any little devil, really, an angel entertained unawares. Because in being, there is no negative problem. So why should we accept something which does not exist in being? We should blame ourselves to be so foolish to accept something which does not exist in being and make our life just one big burden. Yes. So, can you see how at that point of word of presenting the problem, we already have to make our choice and look at it from a higher standpoint? When we have done that, we can see that that very problem can also present itself in a different light, namely from the point of view of the Christ, of truth, life, love. From the point of view of truth, life, love. Truth, that great ideal, that complete health, ideal health, that as life comes to us in an individual way, as an individual ideal of health, and says, I am at the point of absolute consummation. This very absolute fact is misunderstood by the human belief. Therefore, in the old paradigm, we see the impact of the Christ in a false way. We have a problem, and so we say, this problem has a mortal cause. That mortal cause, mortal mind, manifests itself as disease, as a primary manifestation. We believe that mortal mind has a Christ, namely that it can manifest itself and translates itself into the phenomena of a disease, for instance. And we feel that that mortal mind, through its so-called Christ, which is the Antichrist, just hits us. It hits a person and becomes individual, wrongly individual, namely that it hits at the point of the counterfeit of life an individual, and the individual says, golly, this is the counterfeit of love, namely this is very evil, this is really a backward step, and I'm just thrown right down into a terrific problem. Then, in the old paradigm still, we therefore try to deal with that problem and say, all right, this mortal mind has hit me individually, therefore I must find the specific truth about this situation. And so we seek our healing, the individual, our healing, as if personally we could have a healing. And it's again we who name the problem as good and evil, and then we, now that's a false translation, then we try to define by reversal to find the specific truth. This is the counterfeit of the translation, that we start with the second translation instead of the first translation and try to translate evil back into good. We try to translate a specific error back into the specific truth. And we have seen that this is not scientific, because we name the specific error and therefore from there try to correct it. So this is the old paradigm. Now what is the new paradigm? If we see that our standpoint has been defined through the word as going out from the absolute divine principle, so we see if a problem approaches us and we are hit by a problem, we go out and say, well, actually, what is the truth about the situation? The truth is that truth, capital T, is primal. That's the primary fact of being, truth and not error. So we are not going to reason from error, but we are going to reason from truth. And in reasoning from truth, we say, all right, the one truth, that ideal truth, manifests itself always in ideas. Never does it bring forth any error. Truth brings only, therefore, truth brings the problem into our lives. It's now no more error. The Antichrist, animal magnetism, that brings the error into our life. Now it is truth that urges itself on us. Truth is the fact, the primal fact, so the problem is only the counterfeit. And I begin to see that I begin to reason now correctly. Now I have begun to reverse the wrong first translation, a false first translation, and translate now correctly from truth to idea, from truth to individual fact, and see that by the law of opposite, the error is uncovered. It's a counterfeit and not a counterfact. So I can see, if the problem is a counterfact, that the fact must be primary, that the fact must be before the counterfeit. Therefore, before the problem was, the fact about the problem was. Therefore, the solution is before the problem. It's not that we have a problem and then second the solution and to find the solution. First is primary is that truth contains within itself the solution, and that solution is primary and therefore shows us the calculus of idea, and this brings the specific error within us to the surface. So it is truth that causes the error. See? Here it is truth that causes the error to appear. What is it? It's truth coming as the right idea and through the law of opposites brings the specific error from undercover and makes it apparent to us, makes it conscious to us. That which lay apparently latent somewhere in the realm of belief within our consciousness is now stirred up to the point where we are aware of it, and so we can really see at that point, that truth brings error from undercover. So, in a way, truth causes the error to appear, not to disappear at this point, causes the error to appear in order to be seen, so that afterwards it can be dealt with and corrected. Therefore, again, we have that sense, oh, well. If a problem is there and touches me, it's apparently a truth there that is already solved and has a solution, and that impels the error that is latent in my consciousness to come from undercover, from the subconscious, and comes up to the surface and shows, look here, here is that which has always hindered you to make progress. This is what was standing in your way. Now come and handle it, then you can go forward. Do you see that? So at that point, you see, we could say that truth causes error. It does not create error. Huh? It only causes error to appear where? Not in truth, but in human consciousness. So whenever that error comes, we can say, oh, wonderful, the Christ is at work. Huh? The Christ wants me to bring me forward and not backward. And then, if that happens, I really have a sense of love here, that I feel, is that possible? That one big infinite truth is taking care of all my faults. That it is so big that and so universal and so loving, that in the design of my whole being, in the design of love, truth comes into my individual situation and says, just you I want to touch. And I want to touch you there where there is something which should be handled. And then if you handle that, then you fit into the plan of love. So it's the plan of love, the grace of love, the gift of love that is at work, that does not want us to stay in error, that does not want us to get along, lifelong along, just in error. It has that terrific love to take us out of an erroneous consciousness. So it is the design of love that is behind it. It's love again that causes error to appear in order that it may be handled. Doesn't that look different? Huh? You see now what we were saying at the beginning? So to say, good and evil are not two. See that? They are not two. She didn't say good and evil is one. See, we have to be careful down there. Huh? She only says good and evil are not two, because good is all and evil is not. But we have to see that what appears, what to the conceptional sense of man appears to be evil, when looked at rightly, when you look fairly into the face, you see it as good. And in order to do that, we have to change our standpoint. Yes.